Welcome to the Expert Speak, a service of the Florida Psychiatric Society. I'm Abby Strauss, and thanks for listening.
Edmund Sillins is a research fellow at the National Drug and Alcohol Research Center at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. In September 2014, he and a large group of others published an article in The Lancet about the long-term psychosocial effects of adolescent cannabis use. The article has received, and rightly so, a lot of attention. Dr. Sillins, thank you so much for giving us some of your time.
It's a pleasure, Abby.
Your focus seems to be on the effect of the transition into adulthood and the subsequent developmental outcomes of kids who use marijuana when they're younger. How is it that you got into the study? What triggered you and others to do the study? What concerns did you have? Could you give us a little bit of history?
There were a number of things which led us to do this study. The first is that despite a great deal of research out there, there's still debate over the potential harms of cannabis, particularly the mental health and psychosocial harms. That debate largely centres on whether cannabis is actually an independent cause of later harms or whether the associations that we're seeing are correlational. So that's to say that the association comes about because there are particular characteristics and behaviours of cannabis users which make them vulnerable to later harms. So some say it's not the drug itself. For example, they might say that cannabis use is simply a marker for a developmental path in life that leads to school dropout or mental health problems. My view is that there seems to be mounting evidence of a more direct relationship between cannabis use and later harms, and the results of this study generally support that. The second issue is that cannabis isn't going away. Cannabis use isn't going away. In fact, what we're seeing in Australia, the United States and Europe are moves to decriminalise or legalise the drug, as you've pointed out. While there are some advantages to these kinds of reforms, for example, in terms of reduced criminality and that sort of thing, it's raised concerns that cannabis might become more accessible to young people. And this is a problem considering use in those groups was already quite high. I think your Monitoring the Future survey showed that around 70% of high school seniors in the US smoke cannabis daily. And the situation is similar in Australia, although the prevalence is slightly lower. In Australia, currently, it's illegal to use, possess, grow, or sell cannabis. Penalties are different in each state and territory. So some states and territories have decriminalized minor cannabis offenses, such as the possession of a small amount, personal use. In those states and territories, minor offenses are dealt with a civil penalty, such as a small fine, rather than, say, receiving a criminal charge. So currently, only 3 of the 7 states and territories here in Australia have decriminalised these kinds of minor cannabis offences, but the offence itself is still illegal. In the other states where those changes haven't occurred, any cannabis offence is treated as a criminal offence and the person could receive a large fine or jail time and so have a criminal record.
Where did you get your population of subjects?
For this study, we brought data together from 3 large and long-running longitudinal studies. So this study brought data together that had already been collected. So we had a large sample of adolescents who were part of these 3 longitudinal studies. So there were 2 studies in Australia and 1 New Zealand-based study. They're all considered relatively large life course studies and they've been running for quite some time. So we drew our sample from the participants that had been involved in those 3 studies over time, and we brought them together into this study.
Basically, and this is a huge topic, and it's something that really can't be condensed into just a few minutes, I know that. And what did you find? What results struck you as curious?
There was definitely an impact of early cannabis use on later outcomes. What we found was that the outcomes were worse for those who used cannabis daily at an early age, so for those who were using before the age of 17. For this group, by the age of 25, we found that they were about 3 times more likely to drop out of school or not get a degree, 7 times more likely to attempt suicide, 18 times more likely to have been cannabis dependent, and 8 times as likely to have used other illicit drugs. So fairly startling figures there. An important thing to notice is that while the effects were strongest for daily users, what we found was that there was a sliding scale of harm in the sense that the more often you used cannabis, the more likely you were to experience harm. So even at lower levels of use, there were negative effects, but of course they were diminished.
Was there any correlation or did your group measure alcohol use, concurrent alcohol use in the kids under 17?
We didn't explicitly measure that as part of this study, although we did include early alcohol use as one of the factors which we adjusted for in the analysis. So the benefit of doing that is that we were able to rule out early alcohol use as a possible explanation for the associations that we were seeing. I should point out that we actually took account of 53 potential confounding factors in the analysis. In fact, this study is actually one which included a large number of other factors that might potentially explain the associations. What I'm saying is that we were able to include 53 other factors that potentially could explain the association. And when we did that, we found that the associations that we observed were still there, meaning that cannabis has more of a, early cannabis use is more likely to have a direct relationship with some of these harms later in life.
You have several thousand people as your sample size. That's a very good measuring pool. So I would think that people would look at your statistical analysis and feel that it's really valid. People will think that there was a bias built in somewhere to your study. And I'm not enough of a statistician to read your data, I will confess that, but it seems like you really went to extra ends to make sure that this was statistically valid.
I have to confess I'm not a statistician either. There are a couple of things that are important features of the study that allow us to have greater confidence in our findings. One of them is the large sample size, as you mentioned. So around 4,000 people were included in the study. The other feature is that there was very clear evidence of a dose response effect. What I mean here is I'm referring to that sliding scale of harm, which we saw, whereby the more often you used cannabis, the more likely you were to experience harm. So that's a feature that suggests a more direct link between cannabis and later harms. The second feature of the study is that the associations were resilient to control for a wide range of other factors which might explain them. So I referred to those before. We had around 50 other factors included in the analysis. By including those and having evidence that the associations were strong, that suggests the link with negative outcomes is more direct, say, rather than correlational.
When we look at your table, which is quite interesting, and it's a fair number of numbers, but you break it up into high school completion and between those who never smoke and those who use it weekly or more, and it goes down between that and degree attainment and cannabis dependence. But you go all the way down and you see the thing about depression, and it seems that depression, from my reading of this, is not a particular issue, and yet the suicide rate jumps sky high. Is there any way to explain that?
Yes, you're quite correct. Two things are going on there. In this study, we didn't find a relationship between early cannabis use and depression at age 25. It could be that a number of factors might explain that finding. It could be that the assessment time between when cannabis was smoked in adolescence and when depression was assessed in young adulthood was too large. In other words, perhaps if we'd assessed depression at a younger age, say at 18 or 19 or even 21, there may have been evidence of a relationship between early cannabis use and depression. But we had to make some decisions about when we assessed outcomes, and for the purposes of this research, we assessed our outcomes at age 25. The other point that you mentioned isn't it unusual that there was a relationship between cannabis and suicide, but not cannabis and depression? Yeah. So, yes, that's very interesting. And what we had some discussion around that result, and what I think describes what's going on there is that perhaps depression isn't the only pathway to suicide, that other factors can impact on someone's development or mental health, and that can lead to a suicide attempt. A suicide attempt doesn't just come about because someone's experiencing depression. There doesn't necessarily have to be a relationship between cannabis and depression for there to be a relationship between cannabis and suicide attempt.
Good point. No, that's a very interesting point. One of the things that is being argued is whether or not marijuana is a gateway drug. Does it lead to other illicit drug use and problems? And your data seems to suggest that that is true. Two questions come up. How far can we extend that? And is there a subtype of person that begins to use the marijuana on a weekly basis, and therefore they're more prone, they have different psychopathologies to go into illicit drug use. But statistically, if I'm reading your chart correctly, okay, it says that, let me look here, it says that those who never used marijuana, your combined data is that 9% of these people ended up with other illicit drug use. If we go to those who use it every day, weekly or more, it's 35%. That's a huge difference. I know you can't do everything in a single study, sir. I really do, and I admire what you've done. But was there any follow-up thought as to why there was such a shift between 9% and 35%? That's tremendous.
The percentages that you refer to are reflected in our findings in the larger table, which reports the odds ratios. Those differences in percentages that you mentioned are the reason why we found that in daily cannabis users, the likelihood of illicit drug use at age 25 was 8 times more likely. We didn't explicitly examine the mechanisms which might underlie the association between cannabis and other illicit drug use later in life. So we can really only speculate a bit about what might be going on. One possible explanation is that young people who are using cannabis are likely to have greater contact with drug dealers and peers, for example, who are using illicit drugs. And it's that kind of contact which provides a source of supply of other illicit drugs and also possibly the encouragement to start using them as well. That's a very complex area, and there's really no simple answer.
Agreed. No, I agreed. And that's why I'm looking at these data, and I'm impressed by the fact that you were able to call this data out. It makes us have to ask more questions. And if there's anything about this, it says sit down, look at this much more in detail. There's a trend here. One of the things that we are so concerned about, obviously, is we want our kids to go to school. We want them to have educations. We want them to have jobs. But when I look at the two graphs, high school completion and university degree attainment, they go down. The more marijuana someone uses, the greater the likelihood they're not going to finish their education. Did you expect to find such a significant slope?
The results for educational attainment are quite marked. Especially for high school completion, schooling and degree attainment is something that really happens earlier in the life course. For example, you complete high school at around 16, and then shortly after that you might enter university, and within a couple of years even you may have completed your degree. So if cannabis use is occurring in early adolescence, then that's happening very close to or concurrently. It's happening concurrently with a time when you're at school or at college. And because of that, the impact of cannabis use is perhaps likely to be stronger on your schooling because it's happening closer to when the cannabis use is also occurring compared to something like, an example here is depression at age 25, which has been assessed much later. So with the educational outcomes, perhaps it's not so surprising that the odds ratios were so large, because you might expect that there would be a greater effect of cannabis use on those kinds of outcomes, because it's all happening at the same time. The use and the involvement in school.
This is really fascinating to me. I know I don't have the authority to invite you to do that in the American culture and with our marijuana users, but I would love to see the data and see how it compares to yours. I suspect it would be very similar, very similar. What's next? What do you guys have planned to do with this?
Currently, what we're doing is looking at the impact of cannabis use on educational attainment. And what we're actually looking at is a study which contrasts the effects of cannabis use and educational attainment with the effects of early alcohol use and educational attainment. So that will be taking the research around educational attainment just one step further, and now looking at the impact that early alcohol use might have on educational outcomes. We'll be using the same methodology as we have in this research, where we brought data together from multiple studies, and we'll be working with a sample as large as in this study that we're talking about today.
Fascinating. Good work. Edmund Sillins is a research fellow at the National Drug and Alcohol Research Center at the University of New South Wales in Sydney, Australia. Sir, this has really been interesting, very important work, and I thank you for it, and I also thank you for your time today. Thank you so much.
It's a pleasure, Abby. Thank you.